We're hearing a little bit more of Kedem from Avram Rosenblum, and this is Israel Is Real. And we're speaking with Avram Rosenblum, the founder of the Diaspora Yeshiva Band, and in himself today, in his own right, Avram Rosenblum, Kedem again.
It's about what we do, not about the notes that we play anymore, as long as the feeling gets through. It's not about battles we fight anymore, unless they're the ones within you. Hashiveinu Hashem, Eilecho v'noshuvo, Chadesh yomeinu kikedem.
And we're back. Avram, are you there?
I sure am.
We're enjoying your music as always. I remember being in Jerusalem, and I used to come almost every Motzei Shabbat, you know, to hear you guys and watch you guys. And then I saw you a couple of years back at Berklee School of Music, which was really great, as a soloist with your son on the drums.
Yeah, with Mo on the drums, sure.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about being a melamed, kind of, and music as leadership. I was thinking the other day, you know, we've got movements happening today in our world, and, you know, compared to the 60s, when music really played a major role in sort of leading a movement of youth in a certain direction, you know, music to you, your music is the melamed. You know, it's the thing that was leading a generation, my generation back then, your generation. You were the leaders at the time, and there was nothing like it. You know, showing up on Motzei Shabbat to hear the music, and then seeing as I grew, you know, 20 years later, the artists that followed you and continued to be teachers, and some of you have today become rabbis, and you've got your children now performing and carrying on your work, and you continue. What do you make of all of that? How, you know, the influence, how can you describe the influence that you've had on the generations?
I'm not really sure how to describe it, to tell you the truth. I just know that, you know, that when it was all happening, you know, we realized we were part of something historic. I mean, because let's face it, I mean, you know, when in the history of the world was there a rock band that performed outside of King David's tomb?
I don't know. Maybe rock music then was the harp. I don't know. But
I don't, you know, or maybe they just threw rocks in those days. But, you know, I mean, there's still some people that throw rocks, but we won't talk about that either today.
Right.
You know, but, you know, we knew we were part of something great. There was the whole feeling of this wave of returnees to Judaism, of this wave of interest in Judaism, you know, on the part of a young generation. And again, I don't mean to pigeonhole it and to say it was only Orthodox people that were taking interest. No, it's not true. I mean, every movement, you know, came alive. You know, as I mentioned earlier, in part because there was something to sing about again, because of Shlomo in his time. But every movement was coming alive again. New concepts were being rediscovered all over again. I guess we were, if you will, kind of taking out the Torah from the rusty hinged ark and dusting it off again, you know, to take a look at it again with new eyes and with a restored sense of curiosity and wanting to gain some knowledge. So there were great things happening, you know, in those days. And you know, it was felt. It was felt around the world in every Jewish community. But the center, you know, as always, and as it always will be, the center was Yerushalayim, you know, and Israel. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah, you know that from Zion, you know, shall go forth the Torah, you know, and from Yerushalayim, you know, Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim, and the Word of God, particularly the energy, the energizing factor, you know, comes from Yerushalayim, where our feelings and our thoughts and our prayers and our celebrations, you know, have the most intensity and the most effect, I would say, on the Jewish people throughout the world. So it was just astounding what was happening in those days, and we knew we were part of it. And you know, the concentric effect that it had, you know, the opening up new possibilities for, you know, for young Jewish musicians, you know, giving everybody a way to transition themselves into feeling more Jewish by being able to relate to, you know, to the style of music that people grew up on, you know, that carried, you know, that carried you know, inspiring messages about Judaism. I mean, it was just, it was a great, great time, and I wouldn't say that we, well, I would, let me restate that. I would say to some degree we were very, very conscious of the fact that, you know, we were changing something. You know, on the other hand, who knew how far and how wide and what would happen from all of it? Let me tell you something. The other day, my grandson, my oldest grandson, Yaakov.
Mm-hmm.
So
how old is he?
He's 8. So he was looking at the newly released Diaspora, you know, Live on Mount Zion DVD that we that my son Mo, you know, re-edited and produced and put out on the market. It's a fabulous DVD, by the way.
I'm loving it.
it's really. I mean, I'm not just saying it because I was in it, because I'm just looking at it completely objectively and from a historical point of view. It was an unbelievable undertaking. We performed live on the roof of King David's tomb with the entire Jerusalem, you know, panorama surrounding us from every side. Just something amazing and also very unique. Anyway, so my grandson Yaakov, you know, tells me he watched the whole thing. So I said, well, what was your favorite song on there? So he tells me it was a song I wrote in those days called The Story of Marvin Feingold, which is a, you know, a little story about a kid that finds his way back to Judaism, you know, after his mother puts his old bar mitzvah tefillin in his suitcase when he goes to Israel and, you know, kind of rediscovers everything. So he starts to sing the chorus part of it, which was like a, you know, kind of a Frank Zappa, super fine, fine gold kind of chorus. It was very Zappa-ish. And he's smiling from ear to ear, and he says it was so funny, but it was really weird. You know, so the effect, I guess, called it the diaspora effect. You know,
right.
It's still there, and it's so amazing to see my grandchildren, you know, kind of reflecting that back to me now too. What an amazing feeling that is.
Sort of like, you know, what did Sean think of his father John when he discovered that he was a Beatle, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, you know, the second oldest grandson, Ellie, so he said to me, "Are you famous?"
Tell him yes. Yes, you are. You are now. Look, you're on our show.
So, you know, look, I feel, you know, very much it was a bracha. I feel very blessed. To still have the aura, you know, of that time and those accomplishments, and you know, I'm still attached to it, you know, and it's still attached to me, and I feel very fortunate that, you know, that legacy, you know, still stands on its own legs and really, you know, still has a lot to say, and you know, to the Jewish world, you know, I'm very proud of it, and again I have to. Give credit where credit is due. You know, my son Mo, who, you know, who's been working with me since his early 20s, you know, as the new Diaspora drummer and as my co-producer, and really is the wind in my sails, you know, for the last, you know, 12 or 13 years. I mean, he's really kept the flame alive. He's a great, great fan, you know, of those days and what we accomplished, and he's worked very, very hard, you know, to keep that legacy alive for people to enjoy today and to be inspired by. So I give credit where credit is due.
Let's take a moment just to hear some of that that country music that we were just listening to, David Melech Yisrael, and to hear that influence a little bit. And then Sonia wants to ask you a question.
Sure.
A That was a little bit more funky than the country, but that was great anyway. There's Malchutcha with Avraham Rosenblum and Diaspora Yeshiva Band. Sonia, you had a question for Avraham Rosenblum.
It's not so much a question. When you start speaking about the 60, Avraham, and you said that people get much more involved in music and words, etc. I think that it's coming from also the inspiration that those adolescents in this time, they read much more and they had much more interest than themselves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree with that, but I think that what sparked everybody's curiosity was, you know, a combination of a couple things. Number one, that era was very much a time of self-discovery, as you say. But it was a time of self-discovery more from the behavioral side of things. In other words, people were feeling free. You know, the whole 60s era thing was about personal freedom. And I don't know if people thought about it as much as they acted on it.
It's clear that they acted like this, but it's also, we cannot forget that not a long time ago, the Second World War just stopped, and this is the after trauma activities. You suddenly feel free again.
Yeah, no, that's as we say, zebatua. You know,
you're right.
You know that you know the strictness of the post World War II generation.
You're right.
The work ethic. You know, the survivor attitude. You know that my parents, you know, certainly had, and you know, and that generation, and you know, and just talking from the American point of view, the grandparents of that generation, who were people that came out of the Depression, you know, it was a much more stern type of, you know, stern and disciplined, and you know, you had to produce, but somewhere along the line it lost its soulfulness, you know.
You're right.
And that's part of, what that self-discovery was about. You know, it wasn't just about being straight to the point where, you know, you were completely inflexible about things. But of course, like anything else, you know, reactions very often lead to overreactions.
Hmm.
And I think that, you know, I'm sure all the sociologists, you know, will agree that, you know, some of the more extreme versions of personal freedom, you know, became detrimental to a lot of people. You know, when we talk about drug abuse, or we talk about, you know, people who just got into behavior that was, you know, too self-destructive. So then other things began to become clear about, you know, the things that go on inside people, but as a general rule, you know, it was a reaction, as you know, as you're indicating, and for the normal person that was just looking, you know, to, you know, to lighten up and to feel a little bit, you know, more, you know, more relaxed, and try to, you know, feel a little bit more human. So, you know, that era gave people, you know, something to, you know, to get a little bit more mellow about, you know, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
and what's it, Donovan used to sing, a little bit more mellow yellow, you know. it's all true. The few people I'd say that actually took the 60s seriously on an intellectual level never had much fun.
What about today? What do you think is happening today? Just you know, briefly, we've got about 3 minutes or so, and we certainly want to let people know how to find you and purchase your DVD and your discs and everything.
Well, let me first mention our website, which is diasporaband.com, diasporaband.com. Of course, it's the www before that. And that's where you can find out, you know, about our DVDs and our records, and see some nice video clips from some other TV shows that we had done while we were on tour here in America all the way back in 1979. But it's cool. I mean, if people want to see me when I was still young and skinny, I'm more than happy. So it's there's some good stuff on there. On Facebook, there's also a Diaspora Yeshiva Band page. And there's my personal page, Avraham Rosenblum, for whoever would like to stop in and say hi.
Hey.
What else can I tell you here?
A little bit where the band members have come today.
Well, people are doing different things. I mean, my closest associate from the Diaspora Yeshiva band, Ben Sion Solomon, went very deeply into producing more authentic Hasidic music. From the Breslov movement, that's the followers of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Simcha Abramson, who is our third vocalist and sax player, has been a teacher and a Rebbe for many, many years, and still lives up on Mount Zion, and you know, has had a lot of students over the years that he's been able to influence. Gedalia Goldstein, my old drummer, haven't seen him for a while, to be honest, but he's a very, very serious guy. He plays, I know he plays weddings in the Jerusalem area. Then there's Ruby Harris, your old partner in music.
Yeah, we've had him on the radio here.
So Ruby's in Chicago, and Ruby does everything from klezmer to playing in blues clubs on the south side of Chicago. So he's always having a good time. We had a number of different bass players over the years. The most prominent of them was Menachem Herman, who in Israel is a legend in his own right and actually performs all across Europe as well. Besides being a bass player, he's an astounding guitar player, and you know, does a lot of great stuff, and people really love him. And he's also a very, you know, very joyous, uplifting Breslov Hasidic guy. I think he's got a website, too, called MenachemHerman.com, so he's worth checking out, too. And he's also, by the way, a very close friend of Rabbi Lazer Brody, for anybody that has heard of him. He's worth checking out, too, under the blog LazerBeams, LazerBeams.com.
Yeah, there's
great people out there. Our other two bass players were Adam Wexler, who he was actually our original bass player, and Ted Glazer, who appears with us on the DVD and on the last couple of albums that we did. So, you know, and there were other influences, you know, there were other people, you know, there were some earlier members of the band that passed through and left us some nice songs, and we readapted them, you know, for the band sound, and, you know, and I will say, you know, managed to turn them into big hits. Malchutcha, by the way, was not something I wrote, but it was actually a big, big Israel Hasidic festival, a winning tune. And you have to hear the original version of it, you know, from the festival, because it actually launched the Hasidic disco music movement.
So, Avram, we're going to have to cut you short, but thank you so much for being part of our show today. We really appreciate it, and we love your music. We love what you're doing. We love that you're a melamed, and that everybody else is still a melamed and melamed. And we wish you Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat shalom to both of you. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Wonderful. And we are going to take the show out with your song, Shabbat Shalom. But before we do that, we're going to just tell a little bit about this week's Torah portion, which is also Shabbat Shira, Shabbat of song.
Parashat B'Shalach. Every week, Jews around the world celebrate the gift of Shabbat with the uplifting prayer, sumptuous meals, song, inspired words of Torah, and the rest. The more a Jew separates himself from weekday activities, weekday thoughts, and weekday speech on Shabbat, the more he will feel the special happiness of the holiday. And if you would like to know, even in the time of Moses, Moses instructed the kids of Israel, not to pick up the manna every day, 6 days of the week, but in the seventh day to rest. So
we've come to the seventh day, just about, and we are going to rest. And we'll take you out. We've been talking with Avram Rosenblum. This is Israel is Real with Rachel and
Sonia.
WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. And we take you out with Avram Rosenblum's Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
A little peace, a day of rest and ease, no more the race. Each man's a king, but in his humble place. Shabbat Shalom, it's nice to be at home. Shabbat Shalom. It's nice